know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love No Other podcast from alineatboard.com. I'm your host, Robert Rosenthal. My guest today is former Illini Mark Davidson. You may have seen a segment on BTN The Journey. He was the high school coach for Caleb First, freshman at Purdue. They did a segment on what he's dealing with, and I contacted him, and we've been trying to schedule this for a while. I got COVID, so I couldn't go visit when I was going to when I was in Indy. And so been a while, but we're finally connecting today on the phone. So, Mark, thanks for joining me, and welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I'm glad we're able to connect here finally.
So. Yeah, finally, finally. So I want to give the background. I just want to start with my background, and this may, I haven't even told you this yet. This may surprise you, but I have referenced you in my writing on the blog for years because of the 1993 Long Beach State tournament game.
Okay.
So when I was a student, that was the only tournament win. I was on campus from fall of 91 to spring of 96.
Yep.
That was the one tournament win over Long Beach State. And then the next round, Billy McCaffrey hit 61 threes and we lost to Vandy. But what I reference is, I've said this many times, is that I have said, I like it when each Illini player has what I call a Mark Davidson moment. And what I mean by that is your rebounds in that game. I remember, I think you had six rebounds and four of them were offensive rebounds, I believe. So you came off the bench in that game. And I remember in that second half, at some point you had a putback that was like, you know, it was the, as I tell other people, like if you're a Long Beach State fan watching that game, it's like, who is this guy and why is he keep getting these offensive rebounds? I think one of them you grabbed and kicked to Richard Keene for a three. This is how I have developed that game in my mind.
But right.
I did find a box score recently. You did have six rebounds, four offensive. You played 18 minutes. You had a couple putbacks. So I just wanted to talk through that because it was always kind of important to me that I talk to you to say that. I always say that with Illini players of like, you know what, so-and-so had that one moment that fans will always remember, and for you, it was that game. So take me through what you remember from that Long Beach State game.
Well, I can tell you, I appreciate you saying those nice things. I had very few moments when I was at Illinois, but you got a heck of a memory.
And, well, that's the thing, right? That, you know, that maybe if so-and-so leaves, you know, maybe if Omar Payne, who's a transfer, from, you know, if he leaves, he had a four-minute segment in the Nebraska game this year where he won the game. And so, you know, it's always like that for a guy who's maybe coming off the bench, that there is that opportunity to be in everybody's memory as that one moment. And for that game, that was you for me, so.
Yeah, Long Beach State, you know, they had a good team. They had a guy by the name of Lucius Harris who played many years in the NBA for the New Jersey Nets. And I believe we were down at halftime of that game. We couldn't stop the Harris kid. And
they also had, and fans will remember this, is Byron Russell, who
later,
the Jazz was famous for being the guy who Jordan hit shot over.
That's right.
Lucius Harris and Byron Russell were quite the that was no joke of a Long Beach State team. They were Seth Greenberg was the coach, and they were really good.
Yes. But, you know, Coach Henson had really kind of simplified what my job was, you know. And I remember he would always say, rebound the ball, play defense, and don't be disruptive to the offense. And so rebounding is something I always prided myself on. I love rebounding the ball. And so that game, I was fortunate, had a few bounce my way, and we ended up with a nice win.
Do you remember the putback I'm talking about? So it would have been right after the first timeout in the second half. So here's what I did. The day before, or 2 days before, I was going to come see you in early March. I went to the archives at the athletic department building and went through the archives that they had for that game. I read every article they had on that game. I took photos of this article and that article. Some of these I can send you if you want. You know, I find that Bernie Miklas from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch was covering the game at the time. He has this paragraph: Mark Davidson was a rebounding dynamo, tearing down six boards in 18 minutes of play. Keane also pulled away a season-high five rebounds. The Illini ultimately dominated the boards, earning a 36-22 advantage on the glass. So, so I went through everything I could learn. Do you remember some of these offensive rebounds in the second half or any of the putbacks? Do you have like specific memories of that game?
I honestly don't remember anything specifically. Again, that's been a long time.
Oh, sure. I can't expect you to be like, well, yeah. And then I kicked it to Rich and he hit a rainbow three and then they, you know, Long Beach State called a timeout. Yes. I was just curious of like what that, where that game lives in your memory.
The play I remember from that game was, I think it was a baseline out of bounds. And, I think it was Dion set a screen and I got open because, of course, they're double teaming Dion. And I put it up off the glass. And I remember their kid blocked it. You know, after it hit the glass, it was a clear goaltend, but we didn't get the call. But that's the play I remember.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So you arrived in what? Fall of 92? Fall of 91. Okay.
Yep.
So you were part of the two recruiting classes that were limited by the Bruce Pearl sanctions. You could only have two recruits though in the 91 class and the 92 class. And
that's right.
I believe the staff could not recruit off campus. Like everything had to
right.
be you come to campus. So can you tell me about, you know, how you became one of those two guys?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of wading through the sanctions. I made visits to DePaul. I made a visit to Iowa State. I made a visit to Northern Illinois. Honestly, those were all, for me, backup plans. Like, I knew I was going to Illinois.
Yeah.
And but I wanted to wait out the sanctions. And, you know, Coach Henson called me that night and said, hey, we've got two scholarships. We've got one for you. And I think it was that very night that I committed. So there's no doubt where I was going to Illinois.
Yeah, yeah. So it was. Let's see. Who was Scott Pierce the other one in that class? Who else was in that class? Robert Bennett.
Robert Bennett from Chicago Julian came in with me.
That's right. Yep. Scott Pierce had been there what year before?
Pierce had been there 1 year.
Okay.
Yep.
Got it. Yep. Got it. So it was you and Robert Bennett with the two scholarships in 91. And then it was Richard Keene and
Chris Gandy.
Chris Gandy were the two. And then they could open it back up again and recruit more than two players and actually go recruit off campus and everything else.
Right. Yeah.
So tell me about coming in the fall of 91. So that was my freshman year as well. What do you remember? Where did you have to live in the dorms? Where were you that freshman year?
Yeah, I lived in Weston Hall.
Okay.
And, you know, that was a nice location. It was close to Huff Gym. It was close to Impey. And so, of course, we were at Impey all through the fall, and we did a lot of our lifting and stuff at Huff Gym. And so, I mean, I just loved having access to gyms and weight rooms. I mean, I'm a coach's kid, and that's kind of how I grew up. So, you know, I remember feeling like I was right where I belonged, you know, through the fall workouts and everything. I felt like I was right where I was supposed to be.
That's great. And so I remember that. I mean, obviously I'm a freshman. I'm an Orange Crush. It's this, I believe the summer before was when the Jamie Brandon thing happened, that this star guard was going to come and then the sanctions come down and he goes to LSU instead. And, you know, there was just all this turmoil around and you couldn't add more than two players per class. So that I remember that 91-92 year was just, that was the big drop from what had happened with the sanctions that, you know, at times, wasn't it just 9 or 10 scholarship guys or something like that? Or
I think it was 9 or 10, if I remember right. Yeah, it was kind of a thin herd.
Yeah, yeah. So it was, I remember that Penn State game, the opener. I believe we went up 15-0 to start the game, and I was like, oh, it's fine, we're fine. And then, you know, Penn State was able to rotate players and Illinois really wasn't, and that ended quickly. And lost that game, finished 13-15 on the year. What are your memories of that, of your freshman year there?
Well, my freshman year, I mean, I knew I would have some opportunities. And, you know, I think for me, the adjustment was not so much physical. I mean, I felt like physically I was prepared and I was a strong kid. I was 6'6" and probably 220. And but I think for me, the mental adjustment was tough, you know. And coming up through high school, I had never really dealt with adversity. I had never really dealt with failure. And so for me, that aspect was tough. I didn't play a whole lot freshman year. But, you know, my formula was always the same. It was get your butt to work.
Yeah.
And so I worked like a dog between freshman and sophomore year. We took a trip to Russia, and we played 10 games. We played against the Lithuanian national team with Sabonis and Marcelonis and those guys. And, you know, for me, that was kind of the highlight of my 2 years at Illinois. I just played a lot. I played really well. I think I averaged 16-9 or something to that effect, but just felt very comfortable. And, you know, and I got back on campus and I took another trip with a Big Ten team in August and spent another 2 weeks in Europe, had a great trip, played well. And so I had all kinds of momentum, you know, coming back for my sophomore year. Yeah. And then, you know, that's when, for me, the train kind of went off the track a little bit my sophomore year.
Okay, so let's talk about the train going off the track. What are you referring to? And, you know, that I remember as you like the sixth, seventh man on the team that year. I think in the tournament, only really seven guys rotated, right? In fact, I have the box score here. Yes. Yeah. Brooks Taylor played 6 minutes in the tournament game. So it was mostly the five starters, which was Rennie Clemons, Richard Keene, Andy Kaufman, Robert Bennett, and Dion. And then it was you and TJ Wheeler off the bench, and then some Brooks Taylor if there was guard minutes needed from Rennie and Keene, but really they played most games and Taylor's minutes were limited. So
So
when you say things went off the tracks, what are you referring to?
Well, I'm referring to, you know, basically, like I said, I had all that momentum from summer of 92 and I was ridiculously driven, you know, and I remember, you know, I started putting this pressure on myself. Andy Kaufman came back for my sophomore year. And so Andy and I played very similar styles. And so Andy and I just kind of battled it out throughout the fall. And then, you know, Andy started, which I fully get and fully understand. I mean, he was a 20-point scorer from 2 years prior to that. But then, you know, for me, it was like I started to put massive amounts of pressure on myself and really battled anxiety. And it was something that just got worse and worse as the year went on. And, you know, this was a different era. This was 1992. Like, nobody talked about nothing.
Right, right.
And I'm struggling big time, man. But I didn't tell nobody, you know, because, like, you're just kind of ashamed to admit that you need some help. And I didn't talk to anybody. And I will tell you, man, if I could go back and do it again, I would have found some help. I had people all around me I could have talked to.
Sure.
I did not take advantage of that, and I just kind of kept everything inside and, you know, sunk into a depression and just ended up in a really bad place. And, you know, what I'm thankful for is my Savior, Jesus Christ, he rescued me from that because I really was not in a good place. And he pulled me up out of that mess, and he kind of basically recreated me and gave me a new purpose for why I live my life. And, you know, up to that point, my whole identity was pretty much based on how I performed between those lines on a basketball court.
Yeah.
And that led to a whole lot of ups and downs. I mean, you know, I had some really, really high highs, and then I had some really low lows, and that's how it goes, you know. But to me, the hard part was, again, I was so driven and I had invested so much. And I remember during the season, you know, and I'm just full of this anxiety and there'd be a lot of days I would put a rock in the basement door of Huff Gym. And after practice, I'd go to Huff Gym and I would shoot for hours and hours and hours. And it just drove me nuts, you know, because again, that was always my formula.
Yeah.
If you're not producing, go to work,
yeah.
Do more.
Yeah, yeah.
And that had always worked. Well, now it wasn't working because that was causing me to think more, to put more pressure on myself. And I didn't really feel any external pressure from anyone. It was all from within. And I was just expecting and demanding so much of myself. But I would shoot at Huff for hours and couldn't miss, you know. And then I'd get into games and I couldn't make a shot and it drove me nuts. But again, I'm so thankful the Lord rescued me from that and really showed me basketball is full of ups and downs. And I've been teaching and coaching, playing basketball for, I think, 40 years now.
Yeah.
Lots of ups and downs, man. But the constant in my life is my relationship with Jesus Christ, and I'm so thankful for that.
Was there a specific moment that year when things turned for you, or was there a specific bottoming out, or, you know, what was this, you know, like, here I'm talking about in all this language about the you know, your play in that NCAA tournament game. You know, at the time, were you still struggling with that, still going through that? Had things turned, or was it still going to get worse after that? What was the timing on all that?
I mean, I was still struggling because I was just so angry at myself, you know, and because basically, you know, I just felt like I was crapping to bed, and I knew I was so much better than what I was showing. And I'm telling you, when you're angry at yourself, when you're full of anxiety, it's really hard to play basketball, is what I found out.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I think that summer I worked a Bible camp, and that was a turning point. And that's where the Lord grabbed a hold of my heart and said, what I was blown away by was the unconditional love of God. Like, I don't have to perform.
Yeah.
He loves me perfectly right now, just as I am. And he loves me so much that he don't want to leave me like this. He wants to transform me. And that's what he's continued to do. But I think there are times, you know, we got to hit rock bottom. And I've heard it said, rock bottom is a great foundation to build upon. And that's what God did in my life, because I felt like I was at rock bottom. And he rebuilt me and helped me to enjoy basketball. I'm telling you, if you'd have told me in 1993 that I'd go on and play professional basketball in Europe till I was 33 years old, I doubt it. I doubt it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So when did you decide to leave Illinois? Like, what? I'm assuming a lot of that was part of that you needed a reset, or what all went down with that?
Yeah, that was part of that process. And again, I was in a depression at that time. This was spring of 1993, and but I got to know my brothers. My brother had played at Trinity International University for a guy named Al Brule. And Al Brule went on to have great success at Trinity and then at Robert Morris. And I remember at my brother's graduation ceremony, this was in May of 1993. Mm-hmm. I missed the whole ceremony. I just went with Coach Brule, and we just sat in his office and talked. And I just, you know, after talking with him, I thought, man, I could play for this guy, and he can help me rediscover my love for basketball. And you know, for me, Al Brule was the right man at the right time, you know, for me, and really helped me rediscover my love for the game. And you know, during all those nights at Huff Gym, I had really honed my skills. You know, I just wasn't able to demonstrate those at Illinois because my mind was so messed up. But you know, thankful for the opportunities God gave me in Europe, and just had a wonderful experience playing basketball in Europe.
So how did that process go? Did you just talk to Coach Henson and say, I need a fresh start, or how did all of that go down?
Yeah, I sat down with Coach Henson, and I got great respect for Lou Henson. I got great respect for Dick Nagy, Jimmy Collins, Mark Coombs, and you know, sometimes people approach me and act like I'm going to be mad at my coach. So I'm like, Why would I be mad? They gave me every stinking opportunity, and I just crapped the bed. Mm-hmm. And I got great respect for those guys. So I sat down with Lou Henson and kind of told him what I was thinking. And he was very gracious. He said, Mark, we're in your corner no matter what you decide to do. And that meant a lot to me. And I'll say another thing. I was at the Prairie State Games, summer of 93. Mm-hmm. And I was playing with a group of guys from Aurora where I grew up. And here I see Coach Mark Coombs walking all the way around the upper tier of the stadium to come find me. And he said, hey, man, I just want you to know I've loved having you here. I wish you the best. And that really spoke to me, you know, because that was – he didn't have to do that. Yeah. But I'll tell you another quick story about Jimmy Collins. You know, I still got a note from Jimmy Collins when I was down in the depths of despair. And Coach Collins sent me a note, and I still have it, man. He was just like, Mark, you can be the best. I believe you can be the best. You got to believe in yourself. Keep your head up. I mean, he just oozed positivity.
Yeah.
And Coach Nagy, you know, recently passed away, and Coach Collins also passed away. But you know, I'm thankful for all those guys. I'm thankful for the experience. I think all of that for me was honestly preparation to help me become a coach one day.
Yeah. Was it, and if I'm asking too many questions, you can say, you know, let's talk about something else. But was it difficult with your teammates at the time? I mean, that has to be, you know, as you spoke that, you know, you weren't kind of reaching out, you were dealing with all this anxiety, and you probably could have talked to them about it, but you didn't want to and such. What was it like with your teammates when you were making that decision?
Yeah, that was tough. And again, if I had it to do over, I would have invited people in.
Yeah.
I kept everybody out. Yeah. And you know, when you're struggling like that and you're dealing with shame, it's hard to talk about.
Yeah.
So, you know, I assume my teammates suspected that I was dealing with stuff because they knew how I could play and they knew I just wasn't doing it. But that was difficult. But I still keep in touch with a lot of those guys and maintain those friendships.
So after that season, how many, like, take me through how many more years of college you played and then what the Europe experience was like?
Okay, I played 2 years at Trinity International University. Again, that was for Al Brule. And just had two really, really good years. Again, just kind of rediscovering my love for basketball. And then I was contacted by a few different agents that spring of 1995. And so signed with an agent. He set up some tryouts. I had a workout with the Chicago Bulls, and that went very well. They invited me to their summer league, and then I was set to go to the Milwaukee Bucks. Well, then they had that lockout in 1995, so they shut everything down. Mm-hmm. And so my agent was like, all right, we're going to start exploring options in Europe. And so the Lord led us to France. I truly believe that. And, man, we just loved it. My wife and I got married in July of 95 and pretty much moved to France right away and played 5 years. And then I was coming off surgery and I wasn't physically able to play. So I went back. We went back to Michigan for 3 years. I was an AD and a basketball coach and teacher. And then did that for 3 years, got my foot healthy and started thinking, shoot, I think I can play some more.
Yeah.
And so went back to France and played 3 more years. And then my feet got really jacked up and been teaching and coaching ever since.
So when did you end up at Blackhawk Christian in Indiana? How long have you been there?
I've been at Blackhawk for 10 years. Okay. And man, it's been a great situation for us. We were looking for a K-12 building. We have 7 children from 25 down to 11. And so, with that age range, we really wanted a K-12 building where we could kind of all be under one roof. And so I teach there. My wife teaches there. Our kids have all attended there. And we've just had an unbelievable experience at Blackhawk Christian. And so thankful to be there.
So 20, if your oldest is 25, then your oldest would have been with you at in France, I'm guessing. So what was the experience like starting your family? You know, when you were playing professional ball in France and you're, you know, living in a foreign country.
Man, it was the perfect situation to raise children in, and you know, because I practiced in those early years. You know, they got about 7 different levels in France. So I started kind of in the middle and then was able to work my way up to the top level. But they, you know, I'm practicing 2 hours a day. And other than that, you know, I'm home. And we had unbelievable quality time together. And I mean, even for Lisa and I as newlyweds, because Wesley was born like at the end of my first season, our oldest. But that first year was special, you know. We're newlyweds, and a lot of days we just get in the car and start driving. We had no clue what our destination was. We just drove till we saw something cool and stop off and see it, and did all kinds of traveling all over Europe. And but man, to, you know, to raise children there and have both of us home was and I didn't know what a blessing it was at the time, but you know, when you start coaching and being an AD, you think, holy crap, man, we had it made.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we got all that time, both of us. And honestly, that was a big part of my motivation to go back after those 3 years in Michigan, because, you know, the kids were little at that time. And like a lot of days, when I left the house in the morning, they were asleep. And when I got home at night, they were asleep. And I thought, shoot, we can go back to France and play basketball and be with the kids all day long again. So that's what we did.
Where were you in France? What were you all over playing for different teams, or were you specifically in one area, or how did that
work? We kind of bounced around. We started in a city called Saint-Étienne, which is down by Lyon. And then we went to the Burgundy region for a couple of years. We were near the Alps for a year. Then the last 3 years, we were up in Charleville-Mézières, which is about 10 miles from Belgium. Just had a blast, man. We were about an hour 40 from Disneyland Paris, so we had the annual membership. You know, got to take the kids to Disney basically whenever we wanted. And I mean, the kids just have amazing memories from being there.
That's great. That's great. And so when you settled back here, you're thinking, once you're, as you said, your foot was all jacked up and the career was over, were you immediately wanting to get into coaching?
Yeah. Yep.
So that was so walk me through where you went and then how you ended up at Blackhawk Christian.
Well, the first coaching job I took after finally retiring was at Trinity International.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I saw that job had come open. And so I applied for it and got that job. The timing was good. My mother developed cancer, and she ended up passing away in 2007. So I'm so thankful we were able to be home with her during those last months and just had some special times. You know, the job at Trinity was like a dream job, man. But I could tell pretty early on, like, the kids were still little. And I got spoiled in Europe. That's probably the simplest way to put it, being with my kids all the time, because, you know, I felt like my wife and kids were kind of off doing their thing and I was doing my thing. And I just thought, you know what? I want to be more in terms of a presence as a husband and as a father. And so after 2 years there, got into high school, and I had a buddy at a school not too far from Blackhawk that, you know, they had an AD job plus coaching. And so we did that, and I realized, holy smokes, I mean, they're going to start charging me rent. You know, when you're an AD, you basically live there.
Right, right.
And so then I started looking for coaching without being the AD. And the Lord opened the door at Blackhawk 10 years ago, and the rest is history.
So, smaller Christian school, playing in the smaller leagues, you know, what was the build up? So I guess I should share that you won 2 state titles back to back. I think if I remember correctly from reading, the first one was in 1A, and then you got bumped up to 2A, and you won 2A the next year. So what was the building of the basketball program up to the point of winning back-to-back state titles?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of gradual. You know, the program had some successful years kind of early 2000s, and then they'd kind of taken a dip. And, you know, my two oldest sons were with me. And so, you know, we had good teams there right out of the chute. We had some pretty good teams. What's nice about Blackhawk is we're an independent school. We don't belong to any conference. And so we play nearly all 3 and 4A schools, you know. And I think for us, this is a great opportunity. And then, you know, of course, when you have a kid like Caleb first come through your program, that's going to really translate to some success. And so we won the state title in 19. I think we had a really good chance in 2020 when they canceled things. And then fortunate enough to win another one in 21. But, you know, we've had great kids. And when you get some talent that buys into what you're asking of them, I would say that's going to yield some success.
So when you win that first state title as a coach, so I guess it's 2019 it would be, like, what's the you know, what's that feeling versus, you know, success on the basketball court? Like, it, you know, take me through what it's like to you know, the clock at zero and you've won your first state title.
Yeah, it's definitely special, you know. And I had two kids on that team. My son Frankie was a senior. He's playing at Grace College now. My son Marcus was a sophomore, and he's also playing at Grace College. So, you know, that made it really special to share that moment with two of my sons. But really, you know, all of them feel like your children at that point. And, you know, to me, that's the beauty of coaching, is you understand it's not about you. You kind of step back and let the kids enjoy that moment. And I was remembering the Olympics, Bobby Knight talking about that. They didn't give coaches gold medals, you know, and he fully supported that, because he said, this is about the athletes. And I think from that standpoint, it's so fun just to see the kids be able to enjoy their hard work that pays off. And, you know, when you end your last, every last game is hard. I've been in so many locker rooms after last games. And, you know, but I tell you, even in 2019, that group was so special and so tight-knit. There were honestly probably more tears in 2019 than in years when you lose, just because such a special group, you know. But definitely a special moment.
What was it like? I'm sure you were some part of Caleb first's, you know, recruiting. What was it like to watch one of your players go through that? I mean, you spoke of how you went through that, but what was it like to watch Caleb go through the recruiting process?
I mean, I think it was just great for our entire school, really. I mean, you'd come into we typically do our open gyms before school in the morning, and, you know, you'd come in and you'd have a whole slew of Division I coaches there watching. And
right.
And I think even for our other kid, Caleb got used to a circus being around him from probably about seventh grade. But, you know, for our other kids to be able to experience that and just feel what that's like a little bit. And then a lot of our summer games, you know, you'd have just, you know, the walls were lined with coaches, and just really a great experience for our kids, you know, to be able to go through that. And Caleb handled it all so well. And you know, so many coaches were so gracious. But I tell you, Matt Painter, got great respect for Coach Painter and what he's done at Purdue. And he just recruited the snot out of Caleb. I mean, he was just in our gym all the time. And I think Caleb's really fitting well there.
So in Fort Wayne, I'm curious, you said you played 3A and 4A school. Did you ever play Homestead? Did you ever go up against Luke Goody, I'm guessing? Every year, okay.
We play them every year.
Okay. Tell me what you remember, I guess, from the opposing sidelines about Luke Goody.
I've always liked Luke. I've known Luke since he played with Caleb, since he's probably in fourth grade.
Yeah.
Just a really good kid and a great family. And
I guess for a while there, it seemed like he was going to go football. There was a lot of push. I mean, like, his whole family is, you know, his uncle's Trent Green, and his whole family, you know, played football. His dad played football at Indiana, so... you know, I guess for a while there, maybe he was thinking going the football path and not the basketball path.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he made the right decision, and I think he's going to be a great fit at Illinois. And it's fun to watch him have some success this year, and I know he's going to keep doing great.
Yeah, yeah. And then I guess I should also ask you about, like, the first time we talked, you said, look, we're in the playoffs, and it'll be a little tricky to set up a time. I unfortunately know how that ended for you in an overtime game. So tell me about this season and what it's been like and the push after, you know, you lose kind of your star player and such and that, trying to get back to the championship game.
Yeah, man, I think the expectations for us were really low from the outside. And, my dad's coached forever. He's in the Illinois Basketball Coaches Hall of Fame. And dad always told me, man, it's okay. You slow play. You got a good hand, but you slow play that bad boy and let people think you're not going to be any good.
Yeah.
But we really felt like we had a chance to be pretty good. You know, we had some kids that just due to the people we had last year, we're just kind of waiting in the wings. And this year was their chance, man. And ended up having a really good year. I loved our team. It was an extremely cohesive group. There was no egos, no selfishness, just a bunch of kids that work hard and love to play. And we won our sectional. We won the first game in regionals and then lost in the regional final. But just a great, great group of young men.
Yeah. I feel like I don't want to just drop into the health diagnosis here, and just like, you know, we probably should have spoken it at the outset. But yeah. You've been open about it, and the BTN segment was focused on that and everything else. So when did you get your diagnosis? And tell me about the battle.
Yeah, I got diagnosed October of 2020. And, they found a large tumor on my kidney. And so we went to Chicago right away. We had it taken out. We had the tumor taken out and the kidney. And they attacked the lymph nodes pretty aggressively. And, they sent it off to, they didn't recognize it at the hospital that did it. So they sent it up to the Mayo Clinic for the pathology report. And they finally determined I have something called EAML, which is extremely rare. And all they told me was, we know nothing about this other than the fact that it's super aggressive. And so that was perfectly accurate, as it turns out. You know, it's just continued to spread. In February, it went to my lungs. And then in August, they found this huge mass kind of just above the bladder, and that's the one that's really spreading now. And so it's been a battle because cancer affects you in so many ways. And for me, the biggest thing has just been my level of energy. It's just like you've been hit by a freight train.
Yeah.
And you just don't have much strength. And several games this year during the JV game, I just went to the locker room and sprawled out on the floor just because I had no strength.
Yeah.
And on bus trips, I'd let my assistants drive and I just sprawl out on the floor and lie there, man, because you just are dead tired.
Yeah.
And so that's been it's been an ongoing battle. I will say my faith in Christ has sustained me. And there's a Bible verse that says when we are weak, we are strong. And that verse goes on to say his strength is made perfect in our weakness. Mm-hmm. And I'll freely tell people, I got weakness to go around, man. I feel extremely weak, but that's where the power of God comes in. And the Lord has just continued to fill me with his strength and in ways I can't even explain. I mean, I've had several speaking opportunities and I'll be sitting there beforehand and literally barely able to stand up. And I'm sitting there saying, okay, Lord, you got to come through because there ain't no way I'm about to do this.
Yeah.
And when the time comes, he just fills me with strength. And he's done that time after time after time.
So even when you were coaching for the state title, you said it spread to your lungs in February. So you're getting that diagnosis and then chasing that state title weeks afterwards. I'm assuming strength was an issue then as well, right?
Yeah, that was a battle. You know, we had senior night like 3 days after I was diagnosed, and of course Marcus, my son, was a senior, so that night was like really raw emotionally. You know, and you just didn't know what it was going to do, but you know, being in the lungs is certainly not a good thing.
Yeah.
But again, I never wanted it to become a distraction for our team. And so I talked about it openly with my team, but you know, they understood coach is sick, but you know what, we still got a job to do. And so I think our players handled it exceptionally well.
Yeah. So, you know, I saw in the BTN segment that this year, I believe you were even saying it to the opponents that you would ask to speak to the opposing team that you were playing. Is that correct? Uh-huh. Is that like you just felt led to share with them, hey, I'm dealing with aggressive cancer, and you know, what led to those moments, and can you tell me anything about, you know, what it's like to share that with some 16-year-old kids who, you know, haven't faced some of those things in life yet?
Right. I mean, to me, that was just the Holy Spirit prompting my heart and saying, you know what? The Lord told me from the beginning of this, I'm going to give you a platform through cancer that you otherwise would not have. And the Lord, I could feel the Lord telling me, I want you to make my name great. And I said, Lord, I will shout it from the mountaintops at every opportunity. And it was, you know, there are times like when I'm just talking with the opposing coach before the game, but it got to a point I'd get a text from the opposing coach. Hey, we're playing y'all next week. Would you please share with my team after the game?
Yeah.
And I just think, you know what? You don't expect that, you know, from public schools, but,
sure.
I could tell the Lord was at work, and, God can use anybody he wants, even somebody like me. And I'm just thankful to have those opportunities to share with young people, because I would talk a lot about Matthew 7 and, you know, the wise man and the foolish man. The foolish man builds his house on the sand. And when the storms come and the winds blow, that house comes crashing down. And honestly, I look back at my experience in college, that's exactly what that was. My foundation was in basketball, and God had to change all that. But then it goes on to say the wise man builds his house on the rock that is Jesus Christ, and that is a firm foundation. And when the storms come and the winds blow, that house is going to stand. And that's exactly what God's doing for me.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So to have, I mean, I'm just trying to sit here and picture this, of the mentality of it, of, you know, you here you've faced, you have seven kids, you're married, you have the job, you're both at the same school, you have what you wanted, you get this diagnosis, and here you have this, what I'm going to call excitement in your voice of the platform it has given you to win it, to win a state title, to, you know, be able to share with opponents and have coaches open to you sharing your battle and your journey and your faith. You know, thank God, no one in my immediate family has dealt with cancer. You know, I've lost my aunt to liver cancer, and I've had other, you know, I'm in a healthy family, let's just say that. And
right.
To, you know, the thought of that and the thought of what my mentality would be and how unfair I would feel the diagnosis to be, I don't sense any unfair in your voice or in your stories. It sounds, you know, as if you have full acceptance here, and after that acceptance comes, okay, now what can I do with this?
Right. And I will tell you, that's been a process.
Yeah.
That's been a process of the Holy Spirit kind of molding my heart, because, you know, early on, I was just telling my buddy today, early on, my prayer was heal me. And that's an appropriate prayer. You know, the book of James says that's what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm still praying that. But my primary prayer right now is Jesus be exalted in me through whatever. I want Jesus to be exalted even more than I want to be healed. And I'll tell you, man, I wasn't always there.
Yeah.
that's a work that God did in me, and I'm thankful for it.
Well, God bless you, man. That's amazing. Like I mean, you were even sharing some on that. I believe the first thing you said in the part that they showed on the journey where you were speaking to the other team, where you just admitted, look, I have terminal cancer and this and that. So, I mean, again, if I'm asking too many questions, you know, steer me away. But what is the current diagnosis? Like, what are your doctors currently telling you?
Well, I was in the hospital Monday through Wednesday. They just let me out yesterday. And, you know, my numbers, of course, are all over the map. So they ended up giving me 5 blood transfusions. Numbers are getting a little better. They also went ahead and scanned me when I was in there. And the scans are becoming very predictable. You know, it just keeps spreading, unfortunately, you know. And we're praying we see some shrinkage, but we haven't seen that on a scan yet. You know, this stuff is nasty stuff.
Yeah.
And it continues to spread. As far as the prognosis is concerned, I don't know how long I've got. I don't know if doctors could even put a number on that. But, I mean, I can definitely feel it. It feels like I'm carrying twins. You know, my stomach is huge. And you can feel that crap in there. But, again, just continuing to trust the Lord through all of that.
Yeah. I mean, can I ask what are your conversations with your wife? And, I mean, as I've asked you these questions here, you've shown what I believe to be amazing faith and resilience of this is my circumstance and I'm going to make this of it. You know what, I mean, it has to be impossible at home and with kids and everything else. I mean, it's just amazing to me that you can have this attitude toward it when the news keeps being bad. And, and that you are, hey, you know, as I talked to you the last time, hey, I'm trying to win another state title, and you just have this focus on that instead of the focus on what's happening. So, tell me more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I will say the family piece is the hardest part, no question. I mean, it's hard. And that's the piece I think about Jacob wrestling with God in prayer. I've wrestled with God in prayer, man. Done a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I've done that about my family specifically. The Lord has spoke to my heart, you know, that no matter what, he's going to take care of my wife. He's going to take care of my family. But that piece is super hard. There ain't no doubt about it. But that again reminds me of our hope of eternity. And my wife and children have all accepted Christ into their life. We got eternity together.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still been definitely the hardest piece.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, I'm not trying to evaluate here over the phone, but like, I don't sense much fear. I'm sure it's there. I'm absolutely positive that there's. It's impossible to not go to doctors and see scans and have fear.
Yeah,
you don't have fear behind your voice like I thought you might, or you know, resignation or anything of the sort. You know,
no, I honestly, I'm not afraid, and I know that's the power of God. I go back to, you know, Joshua 1:9 was one of the first verses I ever memorized. Have I not commanded you, be strong, you be courageous, because the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And, you know, I memorized that probably when I was in kindergarten or first grade. But now, like, that verse is in my heart, like I'm living that every day. And I know that's the Holy Spirit, but I'm not afraid. I don't fret about tomorrow. The Lord has been able to keep me in the moment, and that's been a blessing. And, you know, I might be gone in a month, but I'm here right now, and I want to make the most of every opportunity that God gives me today. I want to enjoy my wife and kids every day. We've had some unbelievable times together as a family. And, you know, I'm not going to fret about what may or may not happen weeks or months down the road. I want to be in this moment, and I want to make the most of it. And I know, again, that's the work of the Spirit.
Well, that's amazing, man. I mean, it's amazing to have that level of, you know, faith and positivity in what I can't even imagine of, you know, I get like when you texted me on Sunday saying, hey, I can't Monday or Tuesday because, you know, the doctors want to do a few more drip blood transfusions. It just, you know, just from seeing what I've seen over the last 3 weeks, as we've tried to set this up, like,
yeah,
it just seems exhausting. Like, I have right. to do this, and then I'm in here, and okay, they're going to do 5 transfusions, and then they're going to do this scan. I don't know right. how it's not, how it just doesn't overwhelm to the point of not giving up, but just like, this is too much. Like, I can't understand the strength to, you know, just face each one of those things.
I can't explain it either, you know, other than the fact that it's the Holy Spirit at work. And got an unbelievable support system. I mean, my wife is unbelievable. We've been married almost 27 years, and she is a rock, man. I'm telling you, she's been unbelievably supportive. And she and I have had some hard conversations, you know, but it's brought us so much closer.
Yeah.
And once again, we go back to, we know we got eternity together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I. You know, I don't know how to end here. I don't know. We've been talking such deep stuff, you know.
Right,
I don't want to be like, okay, well, tell us a Richard Keene story, you know. Like, you know, but you know, I just wanted to thank you for joining me. This is, you know, it's, I wanted you to have the opportunity to share your story. You know, you, maybe when we get off the phone here, I'll send you some clips of some of these articles, you know.
Yeah,
I have said
that,
you know, who's gonna have their Mark Davidson moment this year in the tournament.
You know?
Who's gonna have this little moment of I can remember where I was in my room at I lived in my fraternity house. I think it was an afternoon game, if I believe.
Yeah, it was. It was
an afternoon game. So I was watching
it. University of Utah.
Yes, from Huntsman Center. That's right.
Yeah.
And so I was watching, and I'm pacing around my room watching the game, and I remember the one put back and the other rebound kicked out to Keene for a three, and I think it put us back to like 5 or 7 point lead. And, you know, then Rennie kind of took over in the final minute. And there's that famous moment where Coach Henson was trying to call a timeout, and Rennie just ignored everything and drove the lane, got fouled, and put the game away. And
that's right. I remember that.
And everybody after the game was like, timeout? What timeout? No, we didn't try to call a timeout. We knew Rennie had it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
There was that moment. But again, that's, to me, that's the source of what I write about when I write about Illinois sports is, you know, I do it with football as well, that there are guys that just have this one moment. There's an offensive lineman named Jake Feldmeyer who didn't play for 4.5 years and then had his best 5 games and his final 5 games finally got the start. You know,
that's
just
awesome.
Think of the journey of 4.5 years of you're on the second string at practice and you're going to the weight room and you're just sticking it out. And then you have these little moments. And
that's awesome.
You know, that's what has always driven me about covering these teams. And, you know, seeing your segment on the journey reminded me that, you know, you and I have never talked and I have always written about, you know, people having a Mark Davidson moment. So
yeah, I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, I think I will continue to award those moments for the years to come.
I'll take it. I didn't have many except in Europe.
That's right. Well, yes, against Sabonis. Well, how many Sabonis score on you guys? That had to be
I don't remember. I mean, I know they didn't dominate us. I feel like we lost by 15 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that team was stacked, man. I mean, they were really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
that's Marcellonis was a monster. I mean, he's like a lefty guard that played with Golden State. And then they had Karnichevis, I think a kid that played at Seton Hall. They were loaded.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. I mean, and that was an interesting time to play Russia in what? Summer 92?
1992. Yep. Wow. They had just kind of disbanded. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not long after Gorbachev and the wall and everything else. So, wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's an amazing thing. So, listen, Mark, thank you. I know you have places you need to go, and we said we'd cut off at a certain time. So, I appreciate you doing this. You know, I don't even want to say best of luck to you. You know, I know what you're facing, and your faith is inspiring. It really is. It's
amen. You know, glory to God, man.
For you to be able to not, you know, I would be such a woe is me kind of person at a moment like that. And the fact that you aren't is really inspiring. So thank you.
Praise the Lord, man. I appreciate you having me. It was good meeting you.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
All right, man. Take care.